I want to take up in volume 13 in June the 12th, 1921. Jesus finds his life in the soul who lives in his will. Continuing my usual state, Louisa said, my beloved Jesus continues to speak to me about his holy will. And he said, my beloved daughter, birth from my will. So you see that we have to be reborn into the divine will. We have to become whole new creatures in Christ, as Paul tells us in 2 Corinthians 5:17. So he says, my beloved daughter, birth from my will, I do not want you to be a sky studded with stars. It would please me. I would find my work. But it would not satisfy me because I wouldn't find myself. You see, stars and sun are two different things. And Jesus compares himself to the sun, the source of light. Nor do I want you to be a sun, he said, S-U-N, though I would find my delight in it. I would find the shadow of my light and of my heat, but I wouldn't find my life, so I would pass over you. So I want to give you 2 Timothy 6:16. God lives in unapproachable light. Okay. And I want to give you John 14:6. I am the way, the truth and the life. Nor do I want you to be a flowery earth, he said, with flowers and plants and fruits, although it would be pleasing to me. Nor do I want you to be a flowery earth with flowers and plants and fruits, although it would be pleasing to me, since I would find the breath of my fragrances, traces of my sweetness, the mastery of my creative hand. In sum, I would find my works, but I wouldn't find my life. You can see what he's getting at all the time. He's looking for something extremely special. I would find my works, but I would not find my life. Therefore, I'd pass over everything. I would continue to wander without stopping. What was I looking for? I'm looking for my life. And where would I find my life? I'd find it only in the soul who lives in my will. This is why I don't want you to be either a sky or a sun or a flowery earth, but I want you to be in the center of my will. That is in the very center of the Blessed Trinity. There, where I find my life, I will stop and I will dwell forever. Only then will I be content. I will rest not in my work of creation, as I did in creation, but in my own life. Know that your life must be the fiat. So this is our mission. This is what we're called to. My fiat issued you to the light. And like a noble queen carrying the fiat creator in your womb, you must walk the field of life upon the wings of the same fiat. And that's absolutely delightful. On the wings of the Lord. Sowing everywhere the seed of my will, to be able to form many other centres of my life upon the earth. You can see that it is not enough that we ourselves have this gift operating within us. We must also bring it to others. The Lord wants to find his life in all of humanity, if possible. So know that your life must be the fiat. That's our very life. My fiat issued you to the light, and like a noble queen carrying the fiat creator in your womb, you must walk the field of life upon the wings of that same fiat, sowing everywhere the seed of my will, to be able to form many other centres of my life upon the earth, and then come back into the same fiat in heaven. Be faithful to me, and my will be your life. It will be the hand to lead you, the feet to walk, the mouth to speak. In sum, it will take the place of everything. So there you have the Lord saying very, very clearly, he wants to take over. and he wants to be everything for us. So I want to give you Deuteronomy 32, 15, the Lord alone was her guide. So June the 20th, 1921. This is the simile of the Son and one who lives in the divine will. As I was in my usual state, Louisa said, my always beloved Jesus came with all majesty and love. He took my right hand in his and drawing close to my heart, he kissed it. And then with both hands, he clasped my head in his hands, keeping them upon my head for some time. Who can say what I felt being infused into me, she said. He alone can say what he infused into me. And then he told me, you see, the Lord won't touch you just for the sake of touch. That's not him. If he touches us, it is to give us life. Then he said, daughter of my will, my will fills you. Now notice that he wants to be what fills us, that there must be nothing else. So we've got to get rid of anything else that is threatening to fill us, no matter what it is. No matter even if it's good, we've got to get rid of it if it's not divine will. And in order to keep this will of mine in you, I offer my very self as the keeper of my own will. Naturally, God alone can take care of God's will. Nobody else knows the fullness of the value of the divine will. And so the divine will wants to fill us, and the divine will wants to take care of itself in us. The gift that I place in you is so great that I do not want to leave it at the mercy of yourself. Ephesians 3:20. Because you would not have sufficient care to keep it. How could we take care of something that is divine and infinite when we are infinitely nothing? Therefore, not only will I be defense, but I will help you to make it pour outside in such a way that everywhere will be the imprint and my will be seen. Okay, so I want to give you John 7:37 to 39, where Jesus says that if we drink deeply from him, that in the end, out of our own hearts will flow fountains of living water. Then afterwards, Jesus added, one who lives in my will must be the center of everything, because the divine will is the center of everything. And if we're living in the center of the divine will, we're living in the center of everything. Look at the sun up high in the heavens, 93 million miles away. One can see the center of the light, its circumference, but the light and the heat that it spreads beat and fill the whole earth, making themselves life and light of all nature. In the same way, one who lives in my will must live as though circumfused in my own center, which is the life of everything. These souls are more than a sun, they are also light, heat, and the fecundity of all goods. So, those who do not live completely in my will can be called plants and flowers and trees, which receive light. They don't give light. They receive heat. They receive fecundity and life from these suns. And they're living down below. They're subject to growing and decreasing, exposed to wind and frost and storms. But on the other hand, the one who lives in my will, like the sun, excels over everything, triumphs and conquers everything. And while it touches everything and makes itself the life of everything, it is untouchable. Nor does he let himself be touched by anyone, because since he lives up high, no one can reach him. Now, here we have the comparison. There are two levels in which you can live in the divine will. One is that you live completely in the divine will. And therefore you're living high up like the sun, and you're giving light and heat and life and growth to everybody else. Or you can live in the divine will not completely, And therefore, you can't be a sun. You're down on the earth and you can be plants or flowers or trees, but you have to receive light from the sun and you have to receive heat and so on. And because you're not living completely in the divine will, then you're exposed to trials and storms and all the rest of it. But the one who lives in the divine will is like the sun and triumphs over everything. And while it touches everything, actually nothing can touch it. That's the amazing thing. The person is untouchable. The soul is untouchable. Nor does he let himself be touched by anyone. Touched means influenced, to come out of the divine will and to go to a lower stage. Now, I want to give you a beautiful text in 1 Corinthians 2, verses 10 to 16, where Paul speaks about the difference between the spiritual man and the unspiritual man. It's very good. And he tells you that the unspiritual are not able to discern anything because of their trouble that they are caught with worldly thinking, but that the spiritual can judge everything, even the things of God. So it's a very good text to look at to explain this. And of course, the image of living up high is the image of the eagle, of course, living at the highest level of the mountains. And the opposite of that, of course, are the seagulls living down on the ground level and all their screeching and fighting and battling and all the rest of it. So there are two entirely different ways of describing the way that a person can live in the divine will. So it has alerted us to the fact that there are different levels of living in the divine will. And you will see when you get to the higher volumes that Jesus speaks of four different ways, levels, that people can live in the divine will. But we'll stay with the two we have. So one is halfway in and the other is in completely. I suggest it's much easier to go the whole way. June the 28th, 1921. The souls who live in the divine will do whatever God does. True reigning is to not be excluded from anything created by God. And don't forget that when God created man, he made him Lord of all creation. He's meant to be someone who reigns on the earth. So Louisa said, I was pouring all of myself into the divine will. That's a very important thing to say very frequently. Lord, I fuse all of me in all of you all the time, so that everything in me, my thoughts, my words, my actions, my motivations, my desires, everything is all at the divine level and I can truly live in your will. So she said, I was pouring all of myself into the divine will and Jesus told me, my daughter, the souls who live in my will are the reverberation of everyone and everything. Now, to reverberate means to re-echo, so, or to resound. Okay. In other words, that we echo everything back to God that the human race should be giving to him. And since they are reflected in everything, because the divine will is in everything, as a consequence, they receive the reverberation of all. So the echo of all things comes to us. Now, we're going to see this on a very serious level as we move into the higher volumes. And Louisa has gone so deeply into the divine will that the sins that are hitting against the divine will, Louisa actually experiences the hell of it in herself, just as Jesus did. She would experience it at the level that a creature can experience it, and then he at the full level of being divine and human. So the souls living in the divine will are the re-echo or the reverberation of everyone and everything. And since they are reflected in everything, as a consequence, they receive the reverberation of all. And since my will is the life of everything, in other words, if the divine will is not in us and is not sustaining us in being, we just simply cease to be. Since my will is the life of everything, in my will they run to give life to everything. So if we are in the center of the divine will, and the divine will is maintaining everything in being, then we participate in that. So even inanimate things and plants receive their reflections, and they receive the reflection of all creation. These souls receive the reflection of all creation. These souls harmonize together with all things created by me. That's why in Romans 8:19, Paul tells us that all of creation are crying out for these sons of God to show themselves so that they too can recover from the devastation that happened with the fall of man. So these souls harmonize together with all things created by me. In my will, they give life to all. They are friends and sisters to all. And they receive love and glory from all. My will renders them inseparable from me. And therefore, whatever I do, they do as well. My will does not know how to do things that are dissimilar from me. The kingdom of my will means to reign. Therefore, all of them, all of these souls are queens. Why? Because he's the king. And true reigning is to not be excluded from anything created by me. Now, in the past, in charismatic prayer groups, we used to sing, "Reign in me, sovereign Lord, reign in me." But in the divine will, you actually do that reigning in him. And you reign over all souls, past, present and future. July 14, 1921. Just as the sun forms the life of all nature, the divine will forms the life of souls. Louisa said, "My will was swimming in the eternal volition." That means now Louisa's really surrendered. "And an incomprehensible light," now that's the divine will, 2 Timothy 6:16. God lives in unapproachable light. And 1 John 5:7, God is light. "This incomprehensible light made me understand." That means she's given infused knowledge by God. "And he told me, 'My daughter, for one who lives in my will, it's like when the earth is exposed to the sun." So what he's doing here is, instead of just giving instruction, he's giving an example so that we can somehow grasp what he's saying. So he said, it's like when the earth is exposed to the sun. The sun, the king of all creation, as Jesus himself is the king of all creation, dwells above everything. And the whole of nature seems to beg from the sun that which forms its life, its beauty and its fecundity. In other words, the sun is the source of life for absolutely everything. The flower begs from the sun its beauty, its colour, its fragrance. And as it goes on blooming and opening, it opens its mouth to receive from the sun the heat and the light in order to be coloured and perfumed and to form its life. The plants beg from the sun maturity, sweetness and flavour. All things beg their life from the sun. So the sun is giving life to absolutely everything. My will, he said, is more than the sun. It's much greater. And as the soul enters into its burning rays, she receives life. John 14:6, "I am the way, the truth and the life." And she keeps repeating her, as she keeps repeating her acts in the divine will, she receives my beauty, my sweetness, my fecundity, and my goodness and my sanctity. In other words, she receives everything that the divine will has to give. Each time she enters into the rays of my will, so many more divine qualities does she receive. Now, You can only give what you have. And God only has his divine qualities. That's him. That's what he has. And so each time we enter into the divine will and make an act into the divine will, we receive another glazing of these divine qualities in our soul. So the more we acts we do, the more this painting of Christ is actually achieved in us. That's Ephesians 2:10, that we are God's work of art created in Christ Jesus. And he keeps working on it. Now, as we go through the volumes, you'll hear Jesus saying every now and then, sometimes Louisa says, "What are you doing in me?" And he says, I'm dusting, or I'm tidying up, or something. He keeps working in us all the time. So each time we do our acts, we receive more of the divine qualities. How many varied beauties, how much liveliness of colour, how many fragrances she receives. So, for example, if the gift that God has given to you is the gift of forgiveness, that every time you go into the divine will, that will be refined in beauty and strength and power and all the rest of it. And therefore, in the image of Christ that is you, that is being made, then forgiveness is one of the primary colours. For other people, it's other things, like patience or suffering or whatever. In these souls, Jesus said, could be seen, if these souls could be seen by other creatures, they would form their paradise on earth. So great is their beauty. They are my reflectors. They are my true images. So my reflectors is 2 Corinthians 3:18, where St. Paul tells us that you become like that which you worship. So you will always know by looking at a person what it is that they worship. And Romans 8:30, that we are made into images of Christ. So July the 20th, 1921, the simile of water and the divine will. Continuing my usual state, I was feeling very much embittered, Louisa said, and was saying to myself, your will alone is left to me. I've nothing else. Everything has disappeared. And what she means is that the wonderful apparitions she's had before, all the drama of the crucifixions she has experienced, all that is gone. And what she has now, she has to enter more and more deeply into to thoroughly appreciate. Your will alone is left to me. I have nothing left. I have nothing else. Everything has disappeared. So initially, you know, if you had a very dramatic prayer life up to this, you might think that I'm doing badly. I only have the divine will left. But the point is, she's going to discover more and more deeply that having the divine will, you've everything and you've actually much more than you had before. So Jesus said to her, my daughter, my will is all that must be left to you. And this is, let's take the comparison of water, he said. While water appears abundant in the seas, in the rivers, in the wells and the rest of the earth, it appears as if there's no water. Because if you look at the vast stretches of land, for example, yet there's not one point of the earth which is not soaked with water. So when Jesus says that, I have a question due to the fact that I studied science in the university, and that is that where's the water in the Sahara? Surely the water has soaked away. But if he says the whole earth is soaked in water, it's soaked in water. It's about that simple. And so somewhere, maybe at a very great depth, you'll find the water table, even in the Sahara. In the ancient world, when you read the books of Genesis, for example, the greatest thing that the ancient patriarchs could give their families was water. And so in those very ancient days, you'd find that these ancient peoples would actually fight over water. Because if there's no water, there's no life. And Jesus said, yet there's not one point of the earth which is not soaked with water. There are no buildings in which water has not been the first element to form to build them. There's no food in which water does not hold a primary place. Otherwise, it would be an arid food, which man could not even swallow. The strength that water contains, he's talking about the power of the ocean now, is such and is so great that if it had the freedom to go out of the bounds of the sea, it would devastate and terrify the whole earth. Well, we have experienced that in our lifetimes with the terrible tsunamis that have happened. You can look up the book of Job, chapter 38 to 40, and where you have God taking Job on a journey around creation and telling him that he was the one who said to the sea, thus far and no further. Okay. So Jesus said, my will is more than water. It's true that at certain points and in certain epochs and circumstances, it is as though bound within most extensive seas, rivers and wells. But there's not one thing from the greatest to the smallest in which my will does not run and does not hold its primary place. As I said already, if the divine will was removed from us, we just cease to exist. It's actually that simple. But at the same time, even though it is the centre of everything, it is like as if it is hidden, just as the water is hidden in the earth. And you've got to look for the well, you've got to look for the water table in order to find water for the plants to vegetate. However, when my love will make the era of my will arise, the new era of the maximum benefit towards creatures. Now you see what this new era of the new and divine holiness is about. Maximum benefit towards creatures. Then will the seas and the rivers of my volition overflow. So it's going to be a tsunami of grace that's going to be given to the earth. From the position that we're standing now, which is a very low position, that tsunami seems awfully far into the future. And yet it may not be. We just don't think in terms of a tsunami of grace, do we? I think it's a wonderful thing, because those of you who have children and grandchildren are probably worried about where they stand spiritually. And it would be a wonderful consolation to know that someday a tsunami of grace will sweep them up and take them up into the divine will. I think it's fantastic. So he said, the new era of maximum benefit towards creatures, when the seas and the rivers of my volition will overflow, its gigantic waves will come out and will sweep everything into my will. Look at that, as this absolutely mighty action of God. So the divine will no longer be hidden. Rather, its roaring waves will make themselves seen by all and will touch everyone. And those who want to resist the current will run the risk of losing their lives. So there's a tsunami of grace. I think that's absolutely incredible. I wonder if that is the description of the descent of the Holy Spirit upon the church and the world, which was prophesied by the prophet Joel, in chapter 3, I think it's verses 1 to 10, where he said that the Spirit of God, that's the Spirit of love, will be poured out upon all flesh, regardless of who they are. It doesn't say any particular religion. On all flesh. And that your sons and daughters will prophesy, and old men will dream dreams, and young men will have visions. In other words, it will be all the generations. Everybody will be swept up into this extraordinary grace. So, Jesus said, since my will alone is left to you, you are like water, which holds the primary place over all goods and in all things, both in heaven and on earth. And when my volition will come out of its bounds, your will, disappeared within mine, will have its primacy. Wow, isn't that something? That we will actually participate Because if our will is locked into the divine will, and the divine will is overflowing to the whole human race, then our will is overflowing as well. I mean, this is grace beyond imagination. So July the 26th, 1921, Jesus continues to talk about the divine will under the simile of water. So Jesus said, "My daughter, if the sun is the king of the universe, and with its light it symbolizes my majesty, and with its heat my love and my justice, to the point that when it finds earth that doesn't want to lend itself to fecundity, with its burning breath it finishes withering it and renders it sterile, water can be called the queen of the earth, such that, symbolizing my will, there's not one point into which it doesn't enter, nor is there a creature that can live without it." Sure, we're 80% water at least. Body weight. Maybe one could live without the sun, but without water, no one. Whether we like it or not, we are actually water creatures. And of course, for the 9 months in your mother's womb, you were in a liquid. You were in water. We came from water. Water enters into everything, even into the veins, into the human bowels, just as water enters into the deep bowels of the earth. So you see the way the Lord keeps on trying to explain to us the very deep connection there is between us and the creation all around us. That if water flows into every part of the earth and into the bowels of the earth, it flows into every part of us and into our bowels as well. We have to see the connection. In mute silence, water does its continuous course. It never speaks, it never complains. But sometimes it can rebel and it can take revenge on us. It can be said that water is not only queen, but it's like the soul of the earth. Without water, the earth is like a dead body. It's very interesting. Look at these days, if you have a few days of continuous dryness, how the earth is screaming for water. "Such is my will," Jesus said. It's not only queen, but more than the soul of all created things. It is the life of each heartbeat. It is the life of each fibre of the heart. My will, like water, flows within everything, silent and hidden. And then it can become palpitating and visible. Man can subtract himself from my light, from my love, from my grace, but from my will, never. And the reason for that is that if we're separated from God's will, we just simply disintegrate. He would be like one who wanted to live without water. It's true that there might be someone insane who hates water, but in spite of the fact that he hates it and does not love it, he will be forced to drink it because it's either water or death. So it is with my will. Since it is the life of everything, creatures will keep it with them either with love or with hatred. And though unwillingly, they will be forced to let my will flow in them like blood in the veins. And for those who would want to subtract themselves from my will, it would be like suiciding their own souls. But my will would still not leave them, because they would disintegrate completely. They would cease to exist if God's will removes itself. My will would still not leave them. It would follow the course of justice over them, since it could not follow over them the course of the goods that my volition contains. If man really knew what it means to do or not do my will, all would tremble with fright at the mere thought of subtracting themselves, even for an instant, from my will. The sad thing is that souls who find themselves in hell after their death have gone to the wrong side of the divine will. They've not allowed the divine will to give them life, grace, salvation, glory. So they automatically touch the other side. But it's their own decision. It's not something that God determined to do. In fact, you find when you do the Hours of the Passion how Jesus really grieves over those who will not cooperate with him as Saviour and become part of his mystical body and let him be the source of life for them. So August the 9th, 1921, the effects of the acts done in my will, and the example this time of a machine. So Louisa says, continuing in my usual state, I found myself outside of myself in the midst of a most extensive sea. Now, sometimes when she submits herself absolutely to the divine will, she calls it an extensive light. This time she calls it an extensive sea. I saw a machine, she said, and the engine moved. Water would spurt from all sides of this machine. Rising up to heaven, these waves of water spouted from all saints and angels, and reaching the throne of the Eternal One, they poured mightily at his feet, and then descended again into the depths of the same sea. I remained astonished in seeing this, she said, and I said to myself, what can this machine be, she said, and a light which came from that very sea. Now, the light is infused knowledge coming from the divine will, coming from that very sea, which, of course, is the divine will, says that the sea is my will. The machine is the soul who lives in my volition. The engine is the human will operating in the divine will. It's very, very interesting to listen to this now. Every time the soul makes her own special intentions in my will, the engine puts the machine into motion. And since my will is the life of the blessed as well as of the machine, it's no wonder that my will, which springs out from the machine, enters into heaven, glows with light and glory, spouting upon all up to my throne, and then descends again into the sea of my will on earth for the good of the pilgrim souls. My will is everywhere, and the acts done in my will run everywhere, both in heaven and on earth. They run to the past because my will existed. They run to the present because my will has lost nothing of its activity. They run to the future because it will exist eternally. How beautiful are the acts done in my will. And since my will contains ever new contentments, these acts are new contentments for the very blessed in heaven. They substitute for the acts of the saints, which have not been done in my will, and they are new graces for all creatures. It's a wonderful description of our acts and how our acts enter into the divine will and allow the divine will give more grace to everybody in heaven and on earth. Afterwards, Louisa said, I remained all afflicted because I had not seen my sweet Jesus. Now, she's fixated on seeing him, and she has got to come to the point of realising, I know she's in a very special position and everything, but the scripture says that the just man lives by faith. You find that both in the Old Testament as well as the New Testament. In the New Testament, it's St. Paul's letter to the Romans. But she wants to see him because she has been utterly spoiled and has seen him so frequently. And Jesus moving in my interior, she said, clasped his arms around me and said, daughter, why are you so afflicted? Am I not the sea itself? She does understand what he's saying, but she's not really accepting the shift from one way of experiencing God to the other. And because she's having so much difficulty with this, I think it's a great consolation for us, because the older we get, the harder it is to actually shift your position. If you've prayed to God in a particular way and everything seemed to be going fine by that particular way of relating to God, there's nothing really in you that wants to shift to a different way of doing it. And so even though we've shifted into reading Louisa's writings and doing acts in the divine will, we may not have actually shifted into operating according to the divine will. We may still be saying the novenas from the past. We may still be saying prayers from the past. We may still be thinking as we have been thinking in the past. We actually find it difficult to let go and let God. That's why I think that St. Thérèse of Lisieux was a genius. One of the things she said was that we have to come to God daily with empty hands. And if you come to God daily with empty hands, God can fill you so that your hands are completely full. But if your hands are full, God can't give you anything. If they're only half full, well, does he want to put his divine gift beside your human junk? No, we've got to learn how to let go and let God. And in life, God offers us good, better and best. Now, we had good in ordinary Christianity. We had better when we learned how to pray through our charismatic prayers in the divine will, in the Holy Spirit. And now we have best by living in the divine will. And you know, the enemy of the best is the better. It was going fine for us. Why should we give that up for something that at the beginning we don't see the full benefit of? And so we do have to take risks and let the Lord work with us. So, August the 13th, 1921. Melancholy does not enter into the divine will. The divine will contains the substance of all joys and the fount of all happiness. Now, what's written there as melancholy shouldn't be translated as clinical depression, because a person who has clinical depression is ill. It should be interpreted as sadness. You know, you're down. We say a person is down, they're not having a good day. And Jesus wants to tell us now that you can't be in that condition and truly be in the divine will, because the divine will is the source of heaven. The divine will is heaven and the source of all happiness. So in explaining things like this to us, if we find that we can get moody and get down, then we're given a warning that we're not completely in the divine will, not 100%. So Louisa said, I was feeling very afflicted, and Jesus moving in my interior, which of course is Luke 17:21 and 1 Corinthians 3:16. He said, my daughter, courage, I don't want you to be afflicted on the inside. You see, she's feeling this on the inside. You can have afflictions on the outside caused by either illness or the actions of others or accidents or whatever. But to be afflicted on the inside is not what he wants, because he's the Prince of Peace. I don't want you to be afflicted on the inside, understood, because for one who lives in my will, the smile of heaven, the contentment of the blessed, and the peace of the saints caress the whole of her being. My will contains the substance of all joys, the fount of all happiness. And one who lives in my will, even in sorrow, feels pain and joy, tear and smile, bitterness and sweetness. In other words, you do feel what the earth gives you, but you also feel what God gives you. And this is balanced. Therefore, you don't go into a mood and you don't go into melancholy. And this is all needed together in her. In other words, there's balance. That's one of the extraordinary things you see in the divine will, is that everything is balanced. Contentment is inseparable from my will. And that's the big, big key. Has your sense of contentment and peace increased? If it has, you're going deeper and deeper into the divine will. You must know that as you think in my will, as you speak in my will, as you work in my will, as you love in my will, you deliver to my will as many children, or what we call divine lives, for as many thoughts as you make, for as many words as you say, for as many works and acts of love as you emit. These children or divine lives multiply to the infinite in my will, and they go around through heaven and through the entire earth, bringing new joy, new glory, and new contentment to heaven, and new grace to the earth. So look at the effect that we have in living in the divine will. He says, as you think in my will. We don't perceive that as prayer, do we? As you speak in my will, that might be ordinary speech. As you work, as you love, in other words, as you do your ordinary everyday life, which appears perfectly normal to anybody else, you deliver to my will as many divine lives, for as many thoughts as you make, for as many words as you say, for as many works and acts of love as you emit. These children, or divine lives, multiply to the infinite in my will, and they go around throughout heaven and through the entire earth, bringing new joy, new glory and contentment to heaven, and new grace to the earth, going through all hearts, carrying my sighs, my moans, the pleas of their mother who wants them saved and wants to give her life. I mean, this is just such an incentive to really get into the divine will and realize that we're making such an enormous difference to everybody in heaven and on earth and in purgatory. That's what's so wonderful about it. And then he wants to tell us that there are no sad saints in heaven. Now, these children who are a birth of my will, in order to be recognized as my children, they must resemble me, and they must have the same manners as manner is way of life. So make sure you write way of life there, as the mother who delivered them. So they're a birth of the divine will. So the divine will is the mother, and these children or these divine lives must resemble the divine will, and they must resemble the mother that gave birth to them. So, if you look melancholic, they will be put out of heaven, and they will be told, melancholy cannot enter our dwelling. Sadness is not for heaven. Sadness is for the earth or hell. So, acts done in this mood are not going to get anywhere. They're not going to achieve their purpose. Melancholy cannot enter our dwelling. They will not be able to breach their way into creatures either, because in seeing them melancholic, creatures will doubt that they are true, legitimate children of my will. And besides, one who is melancholic does not have the grace to insinuate into others or to make their way into others, to conquer them and dominate them. But love, joy and peace has that power. So, one who is melancholic is actually not capable of heroism and is not capable of giving himself for the good of all. Many times, these children are aborted, dying during labour. In other words, the acts don't actually complete. And they don't even come out into the light of the divine will. So, there's a good warning for us that we could be in a wrong spirit at the time we want to make an act. And we think that the act is mechanical, so you just have to do it and it's done. It requires your whole soul to be involved. And it requires you to be consciously consciously aware, I should say, of being fused in the divine will, and that you really want what the divine will wants to do with these acts. And then when you make them with the whole fervour of your being, God can use them in the way that he wants to use them in the divine will. So I'm going to stop there for the moment.